Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you to be back.
So, Ron, the latest in the polls.
Well, the latest in the polls continue to show nationwide that Kamala Harris, has a pretty decent lead, probably about 3.5 points, and it also shows that she has a lead in Michigan right now, which is an important state. But it shows that Trump is in the lead for 3 of those swing states, and another 3 of those of the 7 swing states are just about tied. So what it's beginning to look like, and I don't know if it ends up like this, there's other scenarios, but it's starting to look like the possibility of what we saw in 2016 when Hillary Clinton won the national popular vote, but Trump won most of the swing states. Now, it's unclear that Trump can win most of the swing states at this point. But he's carrying more of them based on polling, even though they're small margins, than Kamala Harris is winning at this point. So it could be a race that sort of ends up similar to 2016. The difference is that the Harris campaign, I think, will be campaigning full-fledged in these swing states, as opposed to Clinton's campaign 8 years ago, where they thought they were going to win the states and didn't really make the kind of effort they should have made.
You know the old adage, actions speak louder than words, and I've kind of seen a strategic shift for the Harris campaign, where obviously she is sitting down with conducting interviews, albeit friendly environments, right? So they announced the other day that she's going to be interviewed by Stephanie Ruhle over at MSNBC. I happened to watch Stephanie's appearance on Bill Maher the other day, and she said that it was absolutely ridiculous to expect Kamala Harris to have interviews or answer policy questions. And it was interesting because she says that she's running an other than campaign, and that's enough, that she's just telling folks the choice is obviously I'm running, you know, against Donald Trump, and you want an other than candidate, and I don't really need to explain much of anything to you. And it was really interesting because it's embracing the feeling of a party as opposed to citizen voters, right? I mean, that seems to be a void in all of these discussions. Your thoughts?
Well, of course, you know, the American people have a right to question candidates, to listen to what they say in speeches, but also what they say in response to questions. You know, anybody can stand up and read a written speech. What's important is that you have a candidate who has a thought process and a knowledge base that gives you confidence that they can handle big, difficult issues. I'm not saying that Harris can't do that, but I'm saying that by avoiding a lot of real interviews, that you know, it makes people wonder whether she can or not. You know, I was I had CNN on yesterday, and there was some people from a podcast asking her about when she goes to dinner with her husband, do they both sit on the same side of a booth, or do they each sit on an opposite side? And you know, that's fine, I guess, but that has nothing to do with, you know, wars in the Middle East or what,
Ron,
you know,
that wouldn't be top of mind for you if you had an opportunity to interview Kamala Harris?
No, it wouldn't, actually. I don't know if it could even reach my mind. Maybe that's why I wouldn't be a good interviewer. But
but maybe why but you're mystified is, by this whole happenstance.
Right, right. and you know, and it's just it's wearing a little thin, I think. And you know, it's one of the reasons I believe why even though she has built up a national lead, she hasn't built up the lead she needs, or built up any lead for the most part, except for one or two states in these swing states. And it's why Donald Trump still has an opening to win this election.
She came out the other day. She was a staunch supporter of the filibuster, right, when Republicans were in control. Obviously, what a difference a day makes. And now she's saying that she's willing to sacrifice the filibuster in the Senate for the sake of Roe v. Wade. For me, it's just another consideration of her just being a chameleon. I mean, she's all things to all people, depending on the issue and the audience that she's talking to. You know, when we say your values haven't changed, well, that's a value proposition, is it not, when you talk about, you know, the fundamentally the reason why there's a filibuster in the Senate?
Well, you know, this is something we have talked about on this show before, and my position has always been that if the Democrats have control of both houses of Congress and the White House, or if the Republicans have control of both houses of Congress or the White House, they will bust the filibuster. And so I think we, you know, if one party wins everything, I think we're going to see that. And even though Joe Biden was opposed to that, Mitch McConnell, you know, has been opposed to that, Joe Manchin has been opposed to that, other presidential candidates were, I think this time they're going to go do it. They're just going to want to pass what they want to pass and get done what they want to get done, and they're going to use every lever of power they have, and one of those levers of power is to go past the filibuster. Once they started making big exceptions to it, like for judicial appointments and other things, Supreme Court appointments like they have in the past, then you know, it really didn't have much integrity to keep on. And all it took, you know, now all it takes now and in the future is going to be a big ideological push one way or another, and they'll knock it out. Because if you don't have a filibuster and you have a majority of the House and the Senate, even though they may be thin majorities, and you have a president, you can pretty much do what you want. And I think we have people in office now who want to do what they want. And the old traditions and rules, like the filibuster rule, they're just not going to care about us anymore. So I think we're going to see that. I think one of the guardrails that the Senate always had was something that, you know, made a difference over time. But
sure.
But I think people are going to say that the heck with that now. We're just going to look, see what we're going to get done. We're going to get done as much as we can. And if we have to change the rules, we'll change the rules.
The whole system was set up to be deliberate, but not move too fast, right?
Sure, and sure. Not be
swayed by the overwhelming power of the majority in order to ensure
absolutely.
That the minority has a voice as well, which is allegedly what they have stood for years and years and years, except when it doesn't work to their advantage. And this works, you know, as it relates to both parties. But Republicans historically have talked about the elimination of the filibuster a lot less. In fact, to the contrary, they've been more supportive of the filibuster through the decades than Democrats. Let's talk about Trump. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, but let's not forget it was Mitch McConnell who made the last big exception to the filibuster.
Sure.
So when push comes to shove, if they really want an abortion bill, if they want a Supreme Court nominee, and that's either side, there's going to be enormous pressure to get rid of the filibuster. And you know, people like McConnell, who was an institutionalist, you know, who didn't want to make those kinds of changes on a whim, he was in effect pushed to do it because they absolutely needed to keep another Democrat appointment off the Supreme Court, you know, if they wanted to have a conservative Supreme Court. And he did it, and they succeeded. And I suspect you'll see the Democrats do the same thing on abortion. And at a certain point, they're just going to say, well, the heck with the rule. Let's just get rid of it, and we'll pass what we want.
And I said then that that was going to be go down in history as the biggest mistake that the Republicans ever made, because they really can't, without being branded as a hypocrite, you know, start talking about the Democrats doing the same thing. You did it. You opened the floodgates. What goes around comes around. You know, you get your just deserved when you engage in that, you know, and it's going to turn out to be true. One of the things about the elimination of the filibuster that I think is going to be detrimental to this country, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. I believe we're going to enter an era of the most litigious times ever in the history of this country. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that's true. And when you can't get anything done in Congress, which very well could be the case if you have a president of one party and a Congress of another party, it's going to make it very, very difficult to get anything much done. As we've seen in the past, I mean, it's nothing new, but it would be the continued paralysis. And when you have that kind of paralysis, then people look for ways to get things done in other forums. And if you can't get it done in the House or the Senate floor, you get it done in a courtroom. You file suit. You put pressure on the judicial system, and you try to get judges to do what legislators would normally do. So, yeah, that's all very possible.
Donald Trump seems to continue to talk about tax relief as we start adding all of these provisions and recommendations up. I don't know about you, but I gave up trying to figure out the math. It just doesn't work. I don't know how we're not going to increase the national debt by just giving everything away.
Yeah, and I think one of the mistakes he's making on the tax issue is that he doesn't have a coherent plan. He can't say, look, I want to do these four or five things, and not only are we giving people some tax relief, we're also doing it, and we will do it in ways to build the economy, to expand opportunity and expand employment, or to do it in a way that holds inflation down by having some budget cuts that go along with the tax increases. So there isn't a coherent plan for it. And you know, I've sort of given up on all of these piecemeal tax proposals that both sides make, because I've learned over the years if they cut taxes, raise taxes, or reform taxes, mine go up. So when they start talking about taxes, I get scared, because I know it's going to hit me at some point. And I think a lot of voters no longer believe these promises that they're going to get what supposedly they're going to get. Now I do think the taking taxes off of tips. Tip income was an artful thing politically to propose, that Trump originally proposed and Harris is now supporting as well, because it affects a lot of workers around the country. They particularly were concerned about the tremendous tourism and restaurant and hospitality industry in the state of Nevada, and which is a key swing state. So there's the politics there, but how much can you give away for political reasons and then not, you know, notice where this national debt is going. I mean, we haven't heard any of these candidates talk about the national debt or talk about the budget deficit or reducing the budget deficit. It's not even an issue. I remember some years ago, people would complain, well, it's not a big enough issue. Well, now it's not even an issue at all. It's just like it's not even a problem. And we've got tens of trillions of dollars of debt that has mounted up. And we have a budget now that's got almost as much debt as it has actual, you know, recurring revenue. So the whole thing is really disturbing.
What were your thoughts about what was done with President Zelensky the other day from Ukraine, bringing him to Pennsylvania and having him give a speech and start talking about U.S. foreign policy? I just really thought that was a dangerous proposition by the Biden administration to engage in that activity.
Yeah, I did too. You know, the whole war in Ukraine is a, you know, it's a very delicate and sensitive topic. And even though the public has generally supported what Biden has done there, the support is pretty fragile, I think. And to look like you're playing politics with that is a very, very dangerous game. And the whole idea being that, you know, you bring the president of Ukraine there, there's Ukrainians in a key swing state that's basically still tied in the polls, and hoping to, you know, to make a case for more aid to Ukraine. But at the same time, he's pretty much making a case in support of Biden's policies. And I thought that was inappropriate. And I think it was a mistake for Zelensky to do that for his own purposes.
Yeah, because on the heels of that, we then had the president of Poland opining about our internal politics, being interviewed by, I just lost her name. On PBS, I saw the interview, and it's like, here we go again. Amanpour, Christiane Amanpour.
Right.
It was like, wait, what are we doing? it's like we complain about others getting involved, right? Primarily Democrats, but it's them bringing them over here and getting them involved.
Well, it's everything is all politics all the time. And you were talking about hypocrisy a little while ago, and I was thinking to myself, well, most of these people don't care if they're called a hypocrite or not anymore. They just do what they want to do, and whatever they think is going to help them get elected or win the next election, they're going to do. And it's the same thing with that. Now the Democrats would argue that bringing in
Zelensky,
Bibi Netanyahu,
same thing.
Netanyahu, to have a speech before Congress had political overtones that affected Democrats versus Republicans in the United States too. So I suppose the Democrats said, well, they got away with that. Let's see what we can do. And it's just getting too much. It's getting too much now.
Yeah, especially in light of the divisiveness in this country on these issues, right? It's going to be interesting to see where the landing is going to be in the end here, because once you open that door, to me, you normalize allowing others to speak openly and freely about our elections, but more importantly, or what's even worse yet, feel a level of comfort while they're sitting on our soil talking about our elections, you know?
Sure, absolutely.
And I don't know about you, but that just creates a little discomfort for me. I'm probably not articulating it well, but I'm kind of, you know, I'm just, it's a head scratcher. I'm like, why are we doing this? This is not good.
Sure.
But But anyway, yeah.
No, the whole thing is dangerous, and you know, the curbs are off. You know, it's getting to where you do whatever you can do to win, and you've already demonized your opponent and turned them into a devil, so that justifies doing anything you want.
Yeah. You know, look, I understand that Donald Trump may have a position that's adverse in some fashion or form to some of their best interest over there.
Sure.
But what happens if that individual gets elected?
I mean, sure. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that is our president, right? And if the public speaks, the public speaks. It could be interesting. Ron Fauché, as always, truly enjoy the conversation. Have a great weekend, my friend. Ron is the publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll be right back with Congressman Troy Carter when we return. Stay with us. So a lot of texts coming in, you know, about I'm picking on the Harris campaign and not picking on the Trump campaign enough. I try to make this as fair and balanced as possible. The problem here is, and what you've not heard me do ever, is Monday morning quarterback the vice president for embracing something that President Joe Biden does, because that's the role of the vice president. She doesn't really have a choice. She cannot depart with where she stands relative to the administration. She's the number two. That's not what number twos do. They don't speak contrary to the number one. There's only room on the stage for one person, the number one. I served in that number two role from 1995 to 2007. I understand it intimately. It doesn't mean that you always align with the number one, but you're not able to publicly speak about the distinctions or differences that are there relative to policy or whatever, operational management, whatever it may be. And, you know, so I've not taken the vice president to task on any of those issues. Now, I will take the Biden administration to task, and I will take the vice president to task on those things that she has revealed about herself when she ran for president, right? And I think that's fair game. To do so, where she has changed on so many different things. That's why I brought up the filibuster. She was a huge supporter of the filibuster. Life would be miserable without the filibuster. Of course, they were in the minority. That's why I said, what a difference a day makes. And when it comes to Roe v. Wade, Katie bar the door. There are no barriers. There are no bumpers. There are no curbs. I mean, you know, that's a shock and awe thing that we can violate all of the traditional notions of protocols that we have and understanding and the rules of the Senate or Congress when it comes to the codification of Roe v. Wade now. In fact, just the other day, Gina Raimondo, the secretary to the Department of Labor, said that Trump needed to be extinguished. Micah Brzezinski comes to her salvation and says, you mean voted out, right? Because you see, what comes naturally to folks is to attack others for a difference of opinion. And when it's an opinion that someone has of a key element to their philosophy and ideology, it becomes all the more reason to annihilate who's ever got a differing opinion. And you see this reveal itself, both Republicans and Democrats, okay, over and over and over again. I mean, now, for example, Joe Biden is trying to get everyone to believe that it was his decision to leave public office. We all know better, right? In fact, he said before the United Nations in his speech, I decided after 50 years of public service, it's time for a new generation of leadership to take my nation forward. Really? Does anybody really believe that that's what happened out there? Nancy Pelosi's been walking around like a proud peacock, you know, with a big grin on her face, knowing all the while that she was the one below the surface of the water, drilling holes in the hull of the ship to make sure that it would sink. And then when the tide rolled out and it revealed that Nancy Pelosi was standing there with the drill in her hand, she had to actually explain what she was actually doing. But here we are, we're going to try and convince the world that that's not how this played out. That this was a revelation. This was a spirit that entered the White House one evening and crawled into bed with Joe Biden and tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Joe, it's now time for you to do the right thing. You must resign from office. You must hand this off to a new generation of leadership to take this nation forward." And we actually say these things with a straight face, all the while knowing that we just had 60 to 90 days of reports that were anything but the independence of this decision. Just move on. Say nothing. No one really expects you to say anything about it. But, you know, in the end, we end up looking less than as a country because we're trying to sell people a pig in a poke. The same thing that Donald Trump did to his vice president, Mike Pence. Trying to sell the public a pig in a poke that he was empowered unilaterally when we have this whole balance of powers thing in the Constitution and all of this other stuff, separation, you know, the whole issue. And try to get people to think that the framers would give this one individual at this point in time the sole authority and power to decide about the efficacy of an election. I said then it was a pig in the poke and tried to get people to, and still trying to get people convinced that the vice president had that authority to do so. No, that's not how it works. You can't stare common these things, the obvious, in the face and walk around it. I said that earlier. It's just absolutely ludicrous, and we continue to do it. And we have a lot of people that believe to this day that that's how this government should operate. No, it's never operated that way. There have been attempts by both Democrats and Republicans to decertify electors, right? Over and over and over again. You want to talk about the level of hypocrisy? They have both engaged in that activity. They have both engaged in that debate from the floor of Congress. But as Ron pointed out, and he's right, and I never thought about it this way, they simply do not care because they really believe that you and I are stupid and we're not going to catch on to what actually is happening out there, right? That we're going to miss it, that we're not paying attention to what's being said at what point in time. And I just would remind the texters that can't help themselves as they text in and they want to talk about partisanship. I've gone on record, and I would venture to say that I'm one of the few Republican talk show hosts that have gone on record of saying that we are in a sad place in our history when the best that we have to offer is Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. And as this whole process has played itself out, these two individuals are the best that we have to offer in this country. Reflect on that for a while and tell me whether or not that doesn't kind of give you the heebie-jeebies, right? We'll be right back. Love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Congressman Carter is not able to make it. He is in the House having to cast a vote. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. Let's go to Tim on line one. Tim, welcome to the show.
Yes, a new one in town from Atlanta, Georgia. By the way, enjoying the city here. I haven't been here in several years, and it looked like they're getting ready for the Super Bowl. So I wanted to say, first of all, as a visitor from out of town, I've been very impressed with seemed like they've cleaned up the place a little bit, and you can always have the smell on Bourbon Street. But I really enjoy the food here, the culture, and, you know, we don't have that in Atlanta. And the other thing we don't have in this country is we don't have two good choices here. And when you said that, I had to call in, get off the streetcar. I'm playing tourist today, but I was over here by what do you call it, Tulane University. So I got off the streetcar so I could talk to you. I think when you have to vote for Donald J. Trump, which I'm going to have to, the thing that goes through my mind was, and you were in law enforcement, you know, when you are the chief guy, if your people would have been out there and you lost the election, which I don't think you ever lost an election. I always think you did. I followed your career. And so anyway, I come to New Orleans about probably twice a year. So I knew when you were I knew who you were, and I knew you ran. And if you lost an election and they were rioting, we're in Jefferson Parish, right? That's a city. You don't have county. Everybody's a parish. So if they started rioting over there on the West Bank or wherever it is and where you had your offices, and they started, you would have gone down there and told them to get the hell out of there. And Lupinto won the election, or whoever it was that beat you, if everybody ever beat you. The problem I have with Donald J. is he did that, and he wants to export 14 million people. It's going to be a disaster. It'll be so we need to do something. But I just think he's too herky-jerky, and I know people have done business. I'm in the football business. I'm an agent. And I don't want to say who I represent, but I'm in here in town working with one of y'all's players. So besides, you know, working with the Falcons and eight other NFL teams, and I've been doing this for 30 years, I've been an agent, an assistant to an agent. The problem I have with you know, leadership and his part, and I don't have to walk away from clients. I'll give you his name if you want it, but he's a star in the NFL. I walked away from his business because he came back to me, but he was having some problems. I'm not going to mention his name. That's terrible to say, but he had some drug problems, and he got over it. Now he's got a chance. He's a CEO of a company. But what he didn't do, I mean, what people don't do, if you were there, Neil, I mean, I called you Neil, sorry, I'm nervous. You were there, you would have got up in front of that podium and told your fans, your voters, to go home, especially when they heard one of your officers, Newell, what is thinking in his mind, and his daughter told him to go, that's when I lost. I'll have to vote for him again because I'm not going to vote for Kamala. I would have rather had Biden. I don't know who I want, but you hit a nerve with me, and I have to call in your show, and I don't want to tie up. I know you have a lot of other listeners, and by the way, y'all going to lose when you play the Falcons. We almost beat the Chiefs, and y'all are so overrated. This Saints team,
all right, you just lost all credibility. Tim,
well,
you just lost all credibility.
Center, Eric McCoy, but I'm giving you facts. You lost Eric McCoy. Alvin McCara, whatever his name, in the running
Kamara.
Back. Not right. And then you got problems with his quarterback, too. His sternum got all bruised up. I don't think y'all going to do squat this year. And if y'all want to come to the Super Bowl, come see Atlanta play. We'll be right here in town.
Well, you know, Tim, you lost all credibility with me. That topic, we'll part there between the Saints and the Falcons for sure. But I think a lot of people are having the same difficulty that you're having in trying to figure out where they stand as they put the balance sheet, you know, the compare and contrast sheet together, so to speak. It gets difficult. I know a lot of folks are saying, well, you know, Trump's a convict, he's a criminal, he's this, he's that, and you know, and these are things that people are throwing up because they've already made up their mind. But I like to look at policy decisions. And where I have fallen on this issue is that neither one of these candidates can stand up and articulate why they take the position that they do on certain issues. And they've not done that. And I don't understand why. If you feel strongly about it and you formed an opinion about an issue, why are you not ready, willing, and able to stand up and articulate why and defend yourself if people are attacking you for taking that position? I mean, this is what people do. It's credible leadership. You know, I mean, and that's where I have a problem with both of these candidates. I don't see a lot of credibility. And what Trump has become is more like Kamala of being a chameleon, being all things to all people. I mean, we're just throwing things out there, seeing what's going to stick on the wall, what's going to get the clicks, and not ever having a deliberate, overarching series or collection of policies that actually make sense. And as we, as Ron Fauci and I have discussed many times, there's no discussion about the debt structure of this country and about where that's going to ultimately lead us. We throw out criticisms. We just engage in rhetoric, but we never have meaningful conversation ever. And, you know, we're leading up to the vice presidential debate. It's going to be interesting to see where that goes next week. Although we know that the VPs, there's not a lot that they can do, but it might give us a little bit of a flavor of, you know, why did our candidates, these candidates, pick these two people? I think in both cases, the choices are a little suspect, quite frankly. I don't know. When we come back, we'll check in with Ian. He's in for Scoot. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Ian Hoek's in for Scoot. What do we have coming up, Ian?
Hey, good afternoon, Sheriff. Louisiana has reclassified, as of October 1st, misoprostol and mifepristone, which are sometimes used in abortion care. But now there's concern that that's going to affect women's ability to seek care if they have a wanted pregnancy, or even after they've already given birth. We will talk to Jennifer Avegno, New Orleans Health Director, about that. And we're going to talk to Renee Pastorek from the Downtown Development District about what's next for Canal Street. Used to be the crown jewel of New Orleans. It's had a couple rough decades, but it's got a bright future. We'll talk about that and people's class songs. We're going to play them back.
All righty. Stay tuned. Ian's headed your way.